Now, tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about astrology and the rising of Kundalini. It's a transformation that affects all of us. Up next, Barbara Hand Clow on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Barbara Hand Clow. She's invested 25-plus years investigating cosmic effects on our bodies and how they affect us during critical times of our life, particularly midlife crises. And she's back on Coast to Coast. Her works, of course, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions and Astrology of the Rising Kundalini, Barbara Hand Clow. Barbara, always a pleasure. How are you?
Hi, George. How are you? It's great to speak with you.
You too. What have you been up to over the last few years since we've been together?
Well, actually, I've been in kind of a major shift during the last year. I've actually switched to fiction right now, and I just finished writing a novel called Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. So for this period of time, after writing 12 to 15 nonfiction books, I've switched over to fiction because I want to have more freedom. You know, my characters get to talk about the topics instead of me.
Yeah, what you do is I think you pick real-life events and you put them into the fictional form, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then the background on this novel is the patriarchal abuse, particularly priestly sexual abuse. So the novel, the background of the novel is the Vatican and the current situation in the church.
Well, good luck with that. Controversial, no doubt.
Yeah, of course. It's time.
Now, how did you become an astrologer? How did you get into this?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Way back in, I have to get a year back. Back in about 1965, I used to live in Northern California in Nevada City, north of San Francisco. And a friend of mine walked up to me with an astrological chart and asked me to look at it. And it turns out this person was an astrologer. And so I just started interpreting the chart. And the person's face kind of fell and the eyes got bigger. And he said, "What's going on here?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. It's obvious to me." And so as it turns out, after doing a lot of analysis of my past lives under hypnosis, and I wrote a novel called it's a book called The Mind Chronicles, I investigated, did 100 sessions under hypnosis. And in those sessions, frequently in my past lives, I was an astrologer. So at that point, I did the usual thing that people do. I went to study with different teachers and read the books and all that, and then started reading charts in the late 60s. And then I was, reading astrology for about up until 1991, and then I had written at that point two astrological books, one on Chiron, and then the early version of the book we're talking about tonight. And at that point, I got overwhelmed dealing with the books and teaching. So I haven't been doing readings for a long time, but I am an astrologer.
And Chiron, is that being the planetary body?
Yeah, that's the planetary body that orbits between Saturn and Uranus. And astrologers take it very seriously because when the astronomers first sighted it, they said it was a planet. So because they said that, of course, we did the research on it. And it turns out to have a very major impact on human consciousness. But since then, astronomers are still arguing about exactly what it is.
Yeah, they're finding these objects.
Yeah,
they're everywhere, but I'm not sure they're planets. But do they? You think they affect the astrological charts, Barbara? Chiron, Sedna, the new one they just found way out there?
The only one that seems to have been added to the planetary lineup, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, etc., that has stood its place, well, two of them actually, both Chiron and Pluto, because as you know, the astronomers downgraded Pluto, but astrologers are not following that at all, nor is the general public. It's a major ancient archetype that's affecting the psyche, and then Chiron also is one of the centaurs from Greek mythology. So those two bodies, even though astronomers are describing them differently, we're still using them for house rulership and sign rulership.
Tell me about Kundalini. What exactly does that mean?
Well, Kundalini is the subtle energy in the body, and the easiest way to understand it is through acupuncture, which accesses the Kundalini flow in the body through various acupuncture points. And then the more complex level of Kundalini has to do with the whole question about the chakra system. And most of us who are working in alternative healing believe that we have a chakra system. Basically, most people feel it's seven chakras, going from the base of the spine up above the head to the crown chakra. And the basic belief and idea is that energy, subtle energy, is flowing through these meridians and through these parts of the body. and that these parts of the body have a lot to do with the way in which we process emotional issues and mental issues in relationship to the physical body.
Now, you've been specializing, Keenan, on midlife crises. What is the midlife age bracket, the range, and what are some of the crises involved in our lives?
Yeah. In the culture, people think of midlife crisis as being in the 40s, and that's basically true, but I'm working with an astrological dynamic that is triggering midlife crisis, and I've found that the age range of the most intense midlife crisis is between 38 and 46 years old. But that is for different groups of people. Like right now, people are having their midlife crisis, like people who are in their mid to late 40s. They're having it rather late right now. And yet somebody my age, I had mine when I was 38. So this issue of the age range actually has to do with like decade groups of people. And this is one of the things that creates peer issues and cultural issues, because groups of people are going through this at different ages. And then another thing that happens as we get into this discussion is if you don't resolve midlife crisis during the 40s, then when you hit 50, you really get hit by it. In other words, it can be delayed by avoiding it, and some people manage to do that.
What causes the crisis? Just about anything? Stress, jobs, relationships?
Well, of course, the thesis of this book is that Kundalini rising is actually triggering this crisis. The basic thesis in this book is that we get Kundalini rising when the planet Uranus comes to an opposite point in our birth chart. And what does that mean? That'd be the first question there. And each one of us has a natal chart. We each have a birth chart. And in that birth chart, the planet Uranus has a certain location. It's in a certain house in a certain sign. And so because it takes Uranus 84 years to go around the sun, it gets to an opposition to that birth position when you're around 38 to 46 years old. And the reason for the difference is that Uranus has a slightly elliptical orbit. And so this book it posits, and basically after 25 years now of testing, I'm kind of moving into theory range here, and it posits that when Uranus gets to that opposition point, what happens at that point is Kundalini energy rises in the physical body, and that triggers all of the issues that we've been blocking, all of the emotional issues, all of the mental issues. And so when that process happens for people, it's very, very intense, and then what it causes is marital breakups and losing our jobs and going through all kinds of different crises that are very much recognized by the culture.
How do we stop that?
Well, you can't really stop it. You have to allow it. The way Kundalini energy works, it just simply is a flow of energy. And I think that Kundalini energy is kind of like the solar principle in our consciousness. It's kind of like the growth principle. And so when we reach a certain point in our lives where we're ready to go to another level, then that energy comes in. We can't really stop it. And that's why midlife crisis is such a crisis, because, of course, people try to stuff it. They try to stop it. But it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't seem to work at all. How does astrology work, Barbara? Why does it work? I mean, who would think that planetary alignments and star alignments would affect people?
Yeah, I know. And, of course, a lot of scientists, of course, don't accept this at all.
No.
But, yeah, but what we're working with here is the issue of the angles between the planets in relationship to the sun, as you just mentioned. And as a matter of fact, modern weather forecasting, which was developed by Nelson in the 1930s and 40s, is actually based on that premise. So scientists do use planetary angles to determine different electromagnetic effects and stuff like that. But the difference between astrology and astronomy is astrologers believe that these different effects in the solar system and also in the universe itself, we actually believe that they affect human behavior. And that's not something you're ever going to be able to prove. The only way that anybody ever believes in astrology actually is if they experience it and realize that there is really something going on here, which there definitely is, but that doesn't mean people believe in it, you know.
When they say, like, I'm a Gemini, right? The twins, sign of the twins. Sometimes I think I do have two different personalities, two different kinds. I like them both, but some people have said, hey, you know, you're acting like this, and then another day it's somebody else. Why is that?
Well, that sign, now where does that knowledge come from? Back thousands of years ago, I think probably more than 12,000 years ago, but certainly 5,000 years ago, as soon as people started watching the signs, the location of the signs, and then the angles between the planets, then they started observing how people acted who were born under different sun signs and moon signs. Astrology is very complicated. There's a lot more than just a sun sign, as you know. But they noticed that there were certain kinds of behavior going on with people, and so gradually the definition of what a Gemini is developed over time.
Okay, so let's get into some of the events and some of the planets right now. You know, I hear things like Mercury's in retrograde and things like that. What does that mean, Barbara?
Well, if somebody says Mercury is in retrograde, now our planet goes around the sun, and then all the other planets go around the sun also. So when you look up in the sky, if one planet is moving faster than another planet in relation one to the other, it's like when you're driving along in a car, and then you see another car, it looks like it's going backwards because you're going faster, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look up in the sky, for the planets that are outside the Earth, which would be Venus and Mars and Jupiter and so on and so forth, at different times of the year, some in Jupiter's case every couple of years or something like that, when you look at the sky, it looks like the planet's going backwards for a certain period of time. And the most outrageous thing I think about astrology would be that astrologers say that when a planet is going retrograde, it has a huge influence on things. And then they say when a planet is going direct, it does also. And so for astrologers, as we watch it, it has a huge effect. And so we watch for retrograde motion very, very carefully. For example, right now we're on the verge of moving into what's called a grand square in the sky.
Now, what's that?
What that is that's four planets or more that are at 90-degree angles, and then they're opposing each other. For it to be a square, you have two planets in opposition, and you have two other planets in opposition, and then all four of those planets are at 90-degree angles in relationship to each other. Does that make sense to you?
Getting there.
Again, the confusing thing about astrology is that we do look at everything from the Earth's perspective. Because we read the effect of the planets in the heavens on Earth, and so therefore we are geocentric. But of course we all know that the planets go around the sun. We all understand that. And there's another form of astrology, solar astrology, which is used for different reasons. But regarding the grand square and back to the retrograde motion, what's happening right now as you and I talk on the phone is that the planet Uranus is squaring Pluto, and Pluto is opposite Jupiter, and Jupiter is squaring Uranus, and then Mars is retrograding into the other point that creates a grand square, which culminates between April 20th and April 23rd. And this particular grand square is one of the most profound astrological transits in modern history. It's having a huge effect on human behavior and the level of change in society right now.
Does astrology affect young people as well, kids in their teens, young adults in their 20s?
Oh, yeah. There's different transits. In astrology and the rising of Kundalini, I'm working with three key transits, one of which occurs at age 29, 30, the Saturn return, and then midlife crisis in the mid-40s, and then Chiron return. Excuse me, at age 50. But kids have major transits, especially when they're 15 to 16 years old, and that's when we see adolescent crisis. And so, yeah, kids are having transits as well as adults.
Now, let's go through some of the notes that you've supplied us, Barbara, to kind of help us out with astrology. What does Saturn return mean?
Okay, now, we need this basic principle that you have a birth chart, and then you have Saturn in your birth chart. It's in a certain
location. Everybody does?
Everybody does.
Okay.
Everybody. When you have a birth chart, you have a sun sign, and you have the location of the sun and the location of the moon, and all the planets are in there, and that's why it's so complicated. And so if you take the location of Saturn in your birth chart, it takes Saturn 29 to 30 years to go around the sun, because that's just basic astronomy. And so according to astrology, Saturn is the principle of structure and form. It's the planet that gets us to get it done and do the work and grow and change ourselves. So when Saturn gets all the way around at age 29, 30, which it does that for everybody, now how it reads is individualized, but the actual trend, one of the reasons I wrote this book was there are some basic cycles which are universal, and those were the ones that I really wanted to look at. But when Saturn gets back to its location in the birth chart, literally 95% of people or more make a major change in their lives.
95%?
Yeah, this particular transit, we're going to talk about three transits here. And with the other two transits, it's not as frequent as that. But with Saturn return, and by the way, George, I've gone out and taught workshops where we've tested this with hundreds of people. And we literally can't find anybody in any of our classes who can't identify the major change at 29:30, and you probably could too. But what happens at that point was what happens is we've been growing physically, we've been educating ourselves, we've been learning how to get along in the world. And then what happens at age 29:30 is something needs to happen so that we can develop emotionally, because the development during the 30s is emotionally based. So what happens is people get a divorce, or they get married, or they have a kid, or they get a new job, or they quit a job. They do something in order to shift their physical plane, linear space and time reality, into a different place so that they can begin the emotional growth during the 30s.
That is amazing, 95%. But you're right. I think all of us can think at that age a major step that kind of catapulted us to where we are now something.
And then with astrology, the great thing about astrology, and this book has tables at the back of the book so people can identify exactly when these events are occurring for them. But the amazing thing about astrology is when these are called transits because they're transits in the sky. And when these points come, it usually hits three times over a period of like a year or two, a year and a half, like when we're 29 years old. And you start feeling it when you're like 27, 28. You start realizing something big is coming, and you have to do something. And so astrologers are able to pinpoint the exact times of those transits. And the reason that this is so important is that obviously when you look at the kind of paradigm that I just described, if you know that you need to make a major change at that age, and if you know that kind of thing is going to be happening, then in what it comes, you're probably going to be a lot more rational and logical about what to do about it. And so astrologers see a lot of people when they're right around 29 or 30 because they don't know what's going on, and they don't know why they feel all the pressure that they feel. And you got to change at that point.
Barbara, is Saturn return, is that transit number one?
That's the first in my book. Now, there are many, many transits, but most astrologers would agree that these are at least three of the maybe 10 primary ones. And the reason that I focused on these transits is I'm looking at the whole process of growth all the way through a person's life up to age 85, 90 years old or past it.
All right. What's the second transit?
Okay. The second one is Uranus opposite Uranus, which is midlife crisis. So the next thing that happens during our 30s is Uranus is the planet that rules transformation and change, and it rules electricity, and it rules radical transformation. And so as Uranus approaches its opposition to itself, it's kind of like the full moon.
All right, hold on right there. We'll come back and talk about this second transit in a moment. This is fascinating. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And Barbara Hand-Klau with us. We're going to take your phone calls with Barbara next hour when we talk about astrology. So get ready to let your fingers do the walking. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Barbara Hand-Klau with us. Barbara, let's talk about this second transit, this midlife crisis with Uranus. I'll let you pick it up again.
Okay. So what happens in our 30s is we go through that growth change around 29, 30, and then we start maturing emotionally. And it's a very subtle but intense experience for people. And we go through marriages and children and relationships and all that and conflicts at work and everything. And then as we get usually to our late 40s. Remember, this is it's different for different groups of people. But as we come to our late 30s, actually, 38 to 46, then what happens is we start to go into crisis mode, because we've been growing emotionally, but then what happens for most people is something is going on with them in their emotional field, which is blocking them. It's similar to that block when they're 29 to 30, but at that point, that's more like a physical thing. And because it's an emotional block and because it has to be processed and cleared, it's a big crisis for people because for most people, our emotional growth is the most difficult part of our lives. So people, as this point approaches, and it can be timed by astrology because the planet Uranus seems to be causing the change, then what happens at that point is people really come up against a pretty severe level of change. And at this point, remember I said with Saturn return, around 95% of people do it. But when we get up to midlife crisis, as far as I can see, only about 30 to 40% of people manage to navigate it in the right way. And the first question will be, well, what's the right way? Well, if you're in a situation, a marriage or a relationship or a job situation, if you're in some kind of situation that's blocking your emotional growth, if you stuff it and if you avoid it, then what's going to happen is the crisis when you're a little bit older is going to be much worse. But unfortunately, as far as I can see, about 30 to 40% of people go through a major change and a major transformation at midlife crisis.
What about men and women? Who does it affect the most?
Well, the problem here is it affects them both equally, but they're affected very, very differently as far as I can see. Now, this may be shifting because there's so much change going on with gender. Like with me being the age that I am, there used to be much more of a differential between the way men and women were experiencing things. And so right now I'm watching younger people to see if this influence is still the same. But generally speaking, for men, midlife crisis tends to be a sexual crisis, and for women, it tends to be a crisis of finding a way to get their own space and get their own time. So often, people who are married, and they don't have to be heterosexual; they can be gay. That doesn't affect it that much.
Understand? Yeah.
Yeah. But what can, because if you have a gay relationship, then one person will take a more feminine role, and the other one will take a more masculine role. So the same kind of dynamic plays out. But if you get two people who are relatively the same age, and the guy wants to run around and have affairs and change things that way, but the woman just wants to be alone, all kinds of very difficult things can happen. And I would say that as an astrologer, the best advice that we're able to give is at this point in a person's life. Because if you have some advice at this point, then you're able to make some clear choices versus just getting chaotic. But for a lot of people, they just get to be more chaotic. And there's a lot of movies about this. It's very much understood in culture.
And this is that 38 to 44 age bracket?
Yeah. Yeah, but like, for example, people who were born in the 40s had midlife crisis at age 38, but now people who were born in the 80s are getting it, and in 70s and 80s they are getting it when they're more like 36 years old, and, 46 years old. So in other words, 38, if you get it when you're 38, it's at an early point, and then if you get it when you're like 46, it's much later. And we're at a very different place in our lives when we're 38 versus when we're 46 years old in terms of maturation. So the book deals with a lot of details about how that works.
The third transit, of course, you mentioned briefly, Chiron returns. It's in the 50 to 51 age bracket. Tell us about this one.
Right. And the reason that's 50-51 is, like Saturn, Chiron returns to its placement at age 51. So the way that works is you have Chiron in your birth chart, and then when you hit age 50-51, it comes back to the same location, and it causes a Chiron crisis. And what's happening at this point in our lives is that we've gone through an emotional crisis, and then we've gone through some emotional maturation in our late 40s, and the next level of growth is spiritual. And this is an extremely interesting point, speaking of some of the stuff that goes on coast to coast and some of the changes that people go into in culture, is that at 50-51, people start getting more in tune with the bigger questions and the more subtle issues because they're going through a spiritual transformation. And so if a person didn't navigate midlife crisis, I mean, let's say they were in a really lousy marriage and they just stuffed it and they stayed in it, then what will happen at 50-51 is that they will be pressured at a much, much more intense level, because the spiritual level of the crisis is usually much more intense for people.
And is there anything, once you get beyond this 50-51 age bracket, I mean, does that mean that's it for you or what?
No, the transits keep going on, and one of my favorite transits is, remember that it takes Saturn 29 to 30 years to go around the sun. So therefore, when you're 58 to 59 years old, Saturn goes back to your birth placement again. So when you get a Saturn return when you're 29 to 30, it's about making a structural change in your life. But when you get your second Saturn return at 58 to 60, this is the point in your life when you need to make a change.
Well, you there, Barbara? Well, we're going to have to call her back and get her back on the air, because something was in transit. Maybe Mercury was in retrograde or something like that, but we'll try to figure it out and get her back in and talk more about astrology and what it all means. I think it's uncanny. Again, most of you all know by now, I was born on June 4th. And got a birthday coming up in a couple months. Oh, my. I don't celebrate birthdays. But it truly is unbelievable how astrology, numerology with Glynis McCants just affects all of us, and just what happens when that occurs. I mean, it is as bizarre as it gets. So, we'll experience with that. I'm sure we'll get Barbara back on. We're going to take phone calls with her next hour anyway. And I'm told we have her back on. Barbara, you there?
George, you know there that you this go. Has happened every single time that I've been on Coast to Coast.
This is weird.
This is my fifth time or sixth time, something like that.
Yeah.
And every time this happens, there's an interference on the line or something like that.
And then you go.
Yeah. So this time the line went dead.
Okay. Anyway, so what we're talking about is beyond 51, what happens to you?
Okay, well, so from 51 to 58, you're maturing spiritually and maturing in terms of consciousness, and it's really kind of a wonderful phase as far as I'm concerned, and obviously coping with aging also. But when you get to that 58 to 60 point, this is the point where if you make let's say what you really wanted to do your whole life was be a painter, but you're working in a corporation. If you can start to create intentions when you're 58 to 60 and start to make changes so that you can create that in your lifetime, then what's going to happen is you're going to have a life of fulfillment where you're doing things in your 60s and 70s that you really like to do. So this particular transit is a really important one.
Okay. Now, as I was mentioning to the crowd when you were gone, I've got a birthday coming up June 4th. Do people who are born on the same day, June 4th, regardless of the year, are they all similar?
Somewhat, but to tell you the truth, to be really similar, it has to be the same day in the same year. And it is amazing, that whole issue. They're called astrological twins, and I've run into astrological twins, and I also ran into one of mine. And it is amazing when you meet your astrological twin. You may be doing something completely differently, and your whole lifestyle may be different, but if you talk for a few minutes and start to really put things together, you'll be amazed at all the connections.
And that, tell me a little bit more about these connections. What do they do?
Well, I'll give an example. One time I went to a party, and two guys went running through. There were about 50 people. And two guys looked completely different and acted completely differently, but I immediately felt this incredible connection between the two guys. So finally I said, hey, what's going on with you two guys? And I got them together. They were born the same day in the same year. And then I went to an ice skating party in Chicago, and ended up skating with this guy, and we both immediately took off, and we skated together like dancers. Every movement was coordinated, and then I said, what's your birthday? Same day as mine and year.
Hmm.
So there's really something to this, and having seen it, it's really quite extraordinary.
Now, you also say, though, that there was a Saturn return when we were 29 to 30, but you say there's a second one.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, that second one, remember, is age 58 to 59. So, in other words, because it takes 29 to 30 years to go around, then when you get to the second one, you're like 58 to 60 years old. And so you've gone through that spiritual crisis, you've gone through that emotional development, and you're see, when you're 29, 30, you just do the best you can. You sell your house, you get another job, you have a baby, whatever you do at that point. But when you're 58 to 60, you have enough of the ability to view your whole life, and you know yourself well enough so you know what you want. And if you make some major changes to that point, you can really have a very fulfilled life in your 60s and 70s. And it's really the only way. It's like with Saturn. You really have to use Saturn and use it with intention.
Well, once you do, then it can do some amazing things for you, can it?
Well, yeah, and by the way, this Saturn has such a profound influence on people that if you do follow Saturn's dictates and listen to yourself and make a change, you can change in a really, really profound way.
What kind of year are we going to have generally in 2014 and then 15, 16?
Well, what I'm focusing on my website is the Uranus-Pluto squares. Now, so I'll get into that a little bit. The Uranus-Pluto squares are 2012 through 2015. Now, as you know from talking to me in the past, I'm also a Mayan calendar researcher, and I've written a couple of books about 2011 and 2012 and the issue of the end of the Mayan calendar and a shift in evolutionary codes on our planet. And so from my point of view, I think we went through a huge change at the end of 2012, through 2011, 2012. And I could discuss what I think that change is. Because
yeah, it's by all means.
Yeah. But I wrote a novel about the shift just because as soon as the Mayan calendar ended, and now this could just be a cultural thing where so many people thought something was going on. You know, it can always be like that. Group thinking can definitely alter reality. But we still can't get rid of the fact that there's this calendar that's been around for thousands and thousands of years that focused on this particular point in time. So when the calendar ended, what I saw people doing is I saw people feeling extremely confused, and I also felt like the world was starting to unravel, and I'm speaking politically and tectonically and in terms of huge issues like, NSA data manipulation and Eric Snowden. I mean, I could give you so many examples of just really radical shifting, which I know you've been talking to people mm-hmm. on your show about. But the question was, like, how is the process actually working? And I felt that from 2012 to 2015, because there are seven squares between Uranus and Pluto, that those squares were going to have a huge effect on the way in which we would change. In other words, take a planet where there's a huge amount of stress and a huge amount of change, radical change is what we're living with right now. And then how is that change going to be used in a way that's conscious and effective? And so I've been using my website to writing free articles with each one of the Uranus-Pluto squares. And so the question would be why? Who cares about Uranus-Pluto, you know? Well, the deal with Uranus-Pluto is that they conjuncted during the 60s. And Uranus rules the process of radical transformation. And then Pluto rules the principle of going into the deepest levels of reality and shifting things. So when those planets start working together, they create the most intense levels of change. So what's happening from 2012 to 2015, and during this period, we're having the squares. In other words, what happens is first the planets come together in the sky, and then gradually they separate until they arrive at a 90-degree angle, and that's called a square. And when it comes to square time, squares are manifestation. So astrologically speaking, we are getting the manifestation pressure from the changes that started in the 1960s, which have to do with ecological change and ending war and bringing through changes in corporations and all the things in our society that are out of their integrity. So astrology is really reading this period, 2012 to 2015, as a period of major structural revolution.
Do you see over the next few years any major conflicts occurring on the planet?
Yes. And I can't delineate what they are, and I wish I didn't have to say that. But I think we can already see it brewing, and it already has been brewing. And the positive thing that I can say, and I don't know about you, George, but change is tough, okay, and conflicts are tough. But I do better if I feel like I can understand what's happening. You know, it's when it's chaotic and when you can't comprehend it is when it's so difficult. And one thing I can say as an astrologer is, believe it or not, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, the next month, up into mid-May, the one thing that we're going to have during this period is a better sense of what might happen. We're going to get a better read on what might happen, for instance, in the Ukraine, in the various areas of conflict in the world, a better idea of what might be going on with the Internet and with communication systems. Like, look what's coming up today, some kind of big crisis over security on the Internet, which, first of all, could be manipulation to keep people from being able to have the freedom of the Internet, or it could be truly a real crisis in terms of our financial and political systems. You know, but the only good thing I can say is we're right. This grand square is like a periscope that is going in and focusing these structural changes to the point where we're going to have some kind of a read on what might be going on.
Interesting. On your website, handcloud2012.com, you look at this period between 2012 and 15 as an intense transformation. Have you ever seen it this intense before, Barbara?
I actually haven't, no. And I was a 60s radical, and I was in SDS, and I was a hippie. I mean, I've been in there through all of it. And I have never seen what I would call such a huge field shift. And to get a little bit more complicated about this, as you know, I also work with the model of 9 dimensions. In other words, at any given moment, I'm in linear space and time in the 3rd dimension, but I'm also working with all these higher dimensions and lower dimensions. And I think what's happening right now is, because of mass communications in the Internet and cyberspace, I think that human consciousness is so much occupied in the 4th dimension. The 4th dimension is the reality of dark and light and polarity, and it's the reality of global elite manipulation. It's the realm of our thoughts and feelings, which are collective, and then we're all plugged into it. And I think our consciousness has been moved so extremely and radically into the 4th dimension that we're not doing very well in the 3rd dimension, first of all, which is where we live. We live in linear space and time. And I think what's happening to us, George, is I think we're actually starting, our consciousness is actually becoming quantum-based. And I think that's ultimately going to be a good thing, because when you start to get into quantum consciousness, which in my system is 4th dimensional, then what happens is you have greater possibilities, more probability. You have the opportunity to communicate at a distance in different ways with other realities. But I think that the change is just extremely difficult for people. I'm actually very, very optimistic about how this is going to work out. And I also, to answer your question, I have never seen a situation as stressful as this one.
I think a lot of people, Barbara, are feeling this strange stress, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm writing. What I did is I decided to just write an article for each one of the 7 squares. And so we're getting the 5th grand square. On April 21st, the real time period of intensity is April 20th to the 23rd. But we also have a full moon eclipse coming up on April 15th. So we're just in it at this point. And so what I tried to do is I just tried to decode that a little bit for people, because if you can get a little bit of a read on it, I think it helps to handle it better.
Okay, we're going to come back and take phone calls next with Barbara Hand Clough on Coast to Coast AM.